Welcome to another episode of 40 Minutes in the Old Testament. 40 Minutes in the Old Testament is a 1517 Podcast Network podcast. You can go to 1517.org/podcast and check out all the other podcasts that are living over there. While you're over there, make sure you check out all the other things that 1517 is doing. Events, academy courses, all the articles, all the videos. There's a lot of stuff going on over there, so make sure you check it all out. And, of course, all that stuff is free. I mean, you do have to buy tickets to the events, but even those are cheap. For what you get, but everything else, you just get to partake of it. And of course, that is because 1517 is supported by people like you. If you're one of them, thank you very much. If you're not one of them and you're able, we would appreciate the support for sure, so that we can keep doing what we're doing and not have any paywalls or advertisements or anything like that. Just make it all free, like the gospel, to everyone. Chad, we are in Job chapter 11. Job just got done giving his second response, and his third friend now feels, compelled to speak. I was talking to you before we got into this, and in the ESV, the heading says, "So far speaks, you deserve worse." That's a pretty good heading for what's coming up. But I think the opening line of his speech is basically him saying, "I've got to respond to what I just heard." And Job makes this accusation about his friends, or we talked about this earlier, that they're not really there because, like, they love him and they want to make sure he's okay, and, you know, they want to give him a sponge bath and, you know, tend to his needs, but they're really there out of fear. And that fear, I think, is the fear that if this can happen to Job, it can certainly happen to them, because they know that Job's a better guy than they are. I mean, they're not described as blameless. They're not ones who only walk upright before the Lord. So what could possibly be going on? And whatever it is that Job did to have this happen to him, they want to make sure if they're going to avoid any sin, let's avoid that one, because this looks pretty horrific. Now, Job has been venting all his frustrations, and it seems that Zophar needs to say, not just to Job, but probably to God too, "I disagree. I do not want God to think for 1 minute that I agree with the things that Job just said."
Yeah, and Zophar, he's gonna make it abundantly clear that that Job should just shut his mouth and repent, and then everything would be much, much better. Of the three friends, I think Zophar is the most, not only the most kind of callous and uncompassionate, but uncreative. I mean, there's no compassion whatsoever in his speech. He says a bunch of things that are just platitudes. You know, they're not untrue, but they're also not helpful at all. So, he's quite the character. It relatively short speech, which is good. I mean, this chapter is 20 verses long. So, this will be the third one. So we've heard from two of them. And so far here will be number three. And then we'll start the second round of speeches.
Did Zophar sounds a little more angry than the others too? Like, it seems that Job's words have offended him, or at least that he's nervous about the words that Job just spoke.
Yeah, part of this might be, I hadn't really thought about this until right now, but part of this might simply be the order. So if Zophar would have spoken first, when Job just, had given his opening speech, then maybe he would have been slightly more compassionate, or at least compassionate to some degree. But now that he's the third one, and he's heard, not only has he heard Job give all of these speeches, but he's also heard his other two friends give their speeches, and those made absolutely no impact on Job, didn't change his position whatsoever. So now when it's Zophar's turn, he's heard more, he's frustrated, he's angry with Job, he's afraid that, God, he can't remain silent because God might think that he agrees with what Job is saying. So some of that might prompt his response as well.
Well, if you were there and you thought that God was involved in what's happening, which of course these three friends have made it abundantly clear that they do think that, Job thinks that, everyone present thinks that, and then someone starts uttering all kinds of things, and you're really trying to figure out what it is that God is so upset with this person for, and you think that this person's response is not the right response at all, yeah, you might say, okay, I need to make sure that God not only knows that I disagree, but I'm gonna do that in the form of a rebuke. And that's what this feels like, a rebuke.
Yeah, you know, the two first friends, they didn't come right out and rebuke Job. I mean, they hinted very strongly that there were some issues with him and he needs to examine himself and he needs to confess and all that kind of stuff. Zophar doesn't beat around the bush. He comes right out and says, this is your fault and you need to do something about it. And if you do, then everything's going to be great in your life. He's a very simplistic theologian. Here's how he starts out. Should a multitude of words go unanswered and a man full of talk be judged right? Should your babble silence men? And when you mock, shall no one shame you? For you say, my doctrine is pure and I am clean in God's eyes. But oh, that God would speak and open his lips to you, and that he would tell you the secrets of wisdom, because he is manifold in understanding. And this is the line that gets me. This is the last part of verse 6. And this is why ESV entitles this chapter, You Deserve Worst, because he finishes this section by saying, know then that God exacts of you less than your guilt deserves.
Yeah, dude, just brutal. Like,
wow.
That is
so brutal.
And this is why I say this, is that this sounds like, because you're like, what? Like, why would you do, like, what would ever possess you to do, like, if this was your friend, what would ever possess you to do this other than fear that God is listening and that you have to do, because what Zophar is doing is, He's defending God's position, right? Like, he's defending happening to Job and saying, well, not, I mean, God's more than just. I mean, God's actually, be frankly, just to put it frank, Job, God's being merciful to you right now. I mean, we all know that this is less than you deserve.
Oh, you think this is bad? Oh, yeah. God could give you much worse than what you're going through right now. If you put yourself in this situation, I mean, you're sitting there on the ash heap, you're looking at Job, you're watching, you know, everything happening to his body. You probably smell Job. I mean, as terrible as the situation is, then you're going to just attack him with words such as this. Yeah, he's prompted by fear, anger, all these motivations.
Yeah, I mean, and the words that he uses before this are, I mean, just, well, I can't let all this multitude of words that you've said, I mean, I can't let that go unanswered. I mean, a man full of talk, I mean, that he has to be judged. Your babble is not going to silence me, Job. That's not what it's going to do. You think you could just string together all these words and pull together all this poetry and that's going to make me close my mouth? I don't think so. In fact, this all sounds like mockery to me, and you're going to be shamed for that. I'm going to make sure you are. And your doctrine's not pure. You're not clean in the eyes of God. And I'll tell you what, if God would speak, he'd tell you this, that I am being merciful because you deserve a lot worse than this. I mean, that's like the synopsis of what he does right here. And you're like, good grief, yeah. Dude.
Yeah. Yeah, he's not fair at all because, you know, when he says, well, first of all, Job's not babbling. He's speaking very poetically and very coherently. And nowhere does Job mock. He says, when you mock, shall no one shame you. Job's not mocking. I mean, yeah, he's protesting. He's lamenting. He's being frankly honest with God that he's confused by God. He doesn't understand what God is doing. He has no idea why God is treating the way he's doing because Job doesn't deserve it. And Zophar hears all of that and understands it to be mockery. No, that is not the way one mocks God. That's the way that one laments to the God in whom he believes, but that's not mockery.
I mean,
Zophar is mocking Job.
Yeah, it could be that, because he says this, like, should your babble silence men? So, like, whatever it is that you're saying is not going to shut us up. And then when you mock, shall no one shame you? This could be even like a throwback, and maybe this is part of the reason why he's upset as well. Maybe there's some pride involved. that Job does sort of have this sarcastic tone with them. He's like, teach me your ways.
Yes.
Zophar might be like holding on to that and being like, so we're over here telling you to repent and giving you this sage wisdom, and then you just throw it back in our faces. And guess what, man? If you're going to be like that, you think I'm not going to shame you? I'm going to shame you, actually. And since God apparently isn't going to open his lips and speak, I'll do it for him and tell you exactly what's going on here.
Press secretary for God, Zophar. Yeah. So that's, you know, when he starts out like that, that this speech is not going to improve, and it doesn't. I mean, it's what he says afterward is at least toned down a little bit. It's not like a direct attack, like the opening words are, but it really doesn't add anything to the conversation either. So he shifts gears in verse 7 and says, can you find out the deep things of God? Can you find out the limit of the Almighty? It's higher than heaven. What can you do? Deeper than Sheol, what can you know? Its measure is longer than the earth and broader than the sea. If he passes through and imprisons and summons the court, who could turn him back? For he knows worthless men. When he sees iniquity, will he not consider it? But a stupid man will get understanding when a wild donkey's colt is born a man.
Okay, so the first part of this, where like verses 7 through 10, I feel like Job would just be like, yeah, that's what I've been saying. So like if...
Yeah,
like,
there's nothing new that he's adding here.
Yeah. Hey, can you find out the deep things? Can you find out the deep things of God, Job? And Job's like, no, that's what I've been saying. Oh, can you find the limit of the Almighty, Job? No, that's exactly what I've been saying. Like, it's higher than the heaven. Yeah, I know. Like, I've been saying that I can't argue with God because he's God. That's what I've been saying this whole time. Like, who can turn him back? Yeah, no one. Yeah, I know. Like, that's the whole problem here. And then in 11 and 12, you're like, for he knows worthless men. When he sees iniquity, will he not consider it? You're like, whoa, like that seems a little like pointy. And then verse 12 is just, I don't even know what's going on there.
Verse 12, ESV has, a stupid man will get an understanding when a wild donkey's coat is born of a man. I like the New American Standard puts it like this. An idiot will become intelligent when the foal of a wild donkey is born a man. So it's not even a veil. I think it's pretty pointed accusation that Job is this idiot, that he is this, Robert Alter translates it, a hollow man. The Hebrew there is the image of being empty. Empty-headed is another way you could translate that. So that's who you're acting like, Job. And you're not going to get wisdom. You're not going to get understanding. In fact, you're not going to get that any more than a wild donkey is going to give birth to a man. It's not going to happen. If you persist in your way of being empty-headed, being foolish, being an idiot, being a stupid man, then you're not going to get the understanding that you need. But of course, if Job were to listen to Zophar, I'm sure Zophar would be willing to grant that wisdom to Job.
Yeah, I mean, he really wants Job to stop pretending like you're not a worthless man full of iniquity.
Yeah, and you know, the opening verses where he talks about the limit of the Almighty, you know, it's higher than the heavens, deeper than Sheol. That kind of stuff is all over the scriptures. Stuff is all over the book of Job, too. And this is why I said it's kind of platitudes. It's like, okay, you're just kind of spewing forth a bunch of theological truths. Fine. These are not advancing the conversation. These aren't giving me any kind of hope. These aren't really addressing the situation in which I find myself. So you can throw all kinds of truisms out there, but that doesn't mean that it's going to be very, very helpful.
Yeah.
So sometimes it depends on who is saying something and to whom they're saying it as to whether this truth is going to be helpful or not. And in this case, of course, it's not. So verse 13 says, if you prepare your heart, you will stretch out with your hands toward him. If iniquity is in your hand, put it far away, and let not injustice dwell in your tents. Surely then you will lift up your face without blemish. You will be secure and will not fear. You'll forget your misery. You will remember it as the waters that have passed away. Just water under the bridge. And your life. Sorry, he's so just optimistic here in a just incredulous sort of way that it's almost hilarious. Your life will be brighter than the noonday. Its darkness will be like the morning. You'll feel secure because there's hope. You'll look around and you'll take your rest in security. You'll lie down and no one will make you afraid. In fact, many people will court your favor, but the eye of the wicked will fail. All way of escape will be lost to them, and their hope is to breathe their last. So this is, he goes from kind of, he begins by attacking Job, saying, I'm not going to put up with this. I'm not going to sit here silently listening to all this trash coming out of your mouth. I'm going to rebuke you to your face. I'm going to shame you, in fact. And then he shifts gears and he talks a little theology. You know, you can't figure out the ways of God. Preaches verses 14 and following. And basically he's saying to Job, if you'll do what is right, then everything is not only going to be okay, but you're going to lead this like this wonderful life. People will court your favor. Everything's going to be bright and happy. It's going to be a rose. Life is going to be a rose garden for you, Job. All you have to do is confess and put away your iniquity. Then you can lift up your face and you'll be secure and will live without any fear.
Yeah, well, it does seem that they definitely believe that Job is holding on to something, right?
Yeah. I mean, There is. He says, if iniquity is in your hand, but the whole tone of this is, listen, Job, you can lie to yourself all you want, but you're not fooling us. We know that you've got some iniquity. It's in your hand. It's in your heart. It's in your past. So, out with it. Confess it, and then maybe you'll have hope.
Yeah,
but not until then.
It seems pretty clear they don't believe that he doesn't know what it is either.
Yeah, it's not some like thing he's forgotten about, or you know, something he just you know didn't realize. Oh, I didn't know that I was doing something wrong when I did that. Yeah, they're convinced that he knows, but he's holding out.
Well, I mean, if you're confess it. If you're suffering like this, if God is against you like this, how can you not know? I mean, like if you had that theology, you're going to be like, there's no way that you don't know why this is happening. I mean, yeah. Job, what's the biggest sin you've ever committed? Because that's the one. Like, it's obvious. I mean, this is like this isn't happening to us. Like, what is it that you did that would bring this sort of calamity upon you? There's also this. I mean, this is a pronouncement of judgment at the very end here too. He says, but the eyes of the wicked will fail, all the way of escape will be lost to them, and their hope is to breathe their last. This is, of course, this is what Job wants, right? He said it over and over again, to breathe his last. So what is he saying? He's like, Job, you are this person. You are this wicked person, because your hope right now is to breathe your last, and that is the hope of the wicked.
Yeah. Thankfully, that's the end of Zophar's speech.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm glad that he didn't go on to babble some more. It's a relatively brief 20 verse speech. And then that, you know, that's the end of the first round. All three of Job's friends have had their chance to speak at this point. And they've all taken, you know, a slightly different approach. Some showing at least a little bit of hesitancy and patience and compassion. Until you get to Zophar, and there's no compassion, no patience whatsoever. But yeah, they're all convinced that Job was in the wrong. Now, I mean, it's not as if all three of these guys have, you know, just vastly different theologies, because some of the things that they've said, it crosses over from friend to friend. I mean, they would all agree that you can't search out the ways of the Almighty, right? I mean, Job said that basically. Zophar says this, that his ways, you know, he's higher than the heavens. He's all powerful. All these things they would certainly agree on. What they don't agree on, though, is what Job has done and how he stands with God and what he needs to do to figure out where he stands with God, because they're all convinced that he's done something that's wrong. And Job has not and will not ever concede to what they demand.
Yeah. And Job now, I mean, you're about to get multiple episodes of Job, because Job is about to go on a real long tirade here. I mean, this thing's going to go on for a while. Job's got a lot of words to say in chapter 12 and going forward, but he does start, I do like in chapter 12 the way it starts, because it does seem like he addresses Zophar first, the first couple of verses, and then moves on to other things. But you gotta love that he, Job says, no doubt, so this is, chapter 12, Job answered and said this, no doubt, you are the people and wisdom will die with you.
Yeah, that's full-blown sarcasm there. You are the people and wisdom will die with you. I mean, when you're gone, I just don't know what humanity is going to do.
So wise.
All the wisdom will just, we're going to bury you and we're going to bury wisdom. All hope of other wisdom to come will perish.
I mean, in verse 3 is a dig as well. He said, but I have understanding as well as you. I am not inferior to you. And then this, who does not know such things as these?
Yeah, Job, that last speech kind of picked Job up from where he left off. You know, at the end of chapter 10, he was in a pretty bad place. I mean, he felt like he's just spiraling downward, you know, into deep darkness, thick darkness, gloomy darkness, all the darknesses. And now it's like Zophar's speech has riled him up.
Yeah.
He's ready to go again. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like after that speech, man, I got more to say. I'm going to babble some more.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. So, so you have the wisdom dies with you, that sarcasm. And then, of course, the, I know some things. I'm not inferior to you. And also, everything that you just told me, there's zero people that don't know that. You didn't tell me anything.
Yeah, those are the platitudes that Zophar, thought he was no doubt wise in saying, but he added nothing to the conversation. Yeah.
Good job saying things everyone knows.
Yeah, the sky is blue, the sun is hot, water is wet. Thank you for that contribution. None of us realized that until you graced us.
I guess all that knowledge is going to die with you, Zophar.
Yeah, the verse 4, he says, I'm a laughingstock to my friends. I, who called to God, and he answered me, a just and blameless man, am a laughingstock. And so, he seems to think that it is it's almost like his friends are making fun of him. I mean, who do you think I am? You know, am I someone that you think you need to come along and teach that the sky is blue and the sun is hot, water is wet? I know these things. I know that God is higher than the heavens and he's deeper than Sheol. Of course, I know that. So don't make fun of me by treating me as if I am somehow inferior to you.
Well, and he also does this thing where he says, there's sort of an unwillingness. So they say, hey, I mean, Zophar says, you're a wicked man, you are, you're worthless and full of iniquity. And Job says, no, I'm the guy who called on God. I'm a just and blameless man. Now, I'm laughable to my friends, but I'll tell you this, I'm not going to concede this point.
Yeah. Yeah, and good for Job for not conceding it. I mean, he continues to say the same thing that we have been told about him, that he is a blameless man. He is upright. He is just. He's a laughingstock to his friends, but to God, he is just and blameless. And in saying, I who called to God and he answered me. I mean, Job didn't mean that as prophetic, but it really is.
Yeah.
Because at the end of the book, that's precisely what's going to happen. God is going to never, God is not going to, respond to the friends. He's going to respond to Job. And then Job is going to pray for his friends. So he did call to God and God did in fact answer him. So verse 5. In the thought of one who is at ease, there is contempt for misfortune. It is ready for those whose feet slip. So, yeah, I mean, if you're at ease, like his three friends are, they have contempt for misfortune. You know, that is a it's a very true statement. You know, if everything is going great, if everything is wonderful in your life, if you're at ease, if you're like Zophar and you got everything figured out, well, yeah, that tends to foster some contempt for misfortune. In fact, you can even foster kind of a what is that German word? Schadenfreude, that kind of delight in other people's misfortune
Yeah.
when you're at ease, you know. So that's the way it is for people that are at ease, but it's ready for those whose feet slip.
Well, it also turns out that other people's misfortune can if you're living in ease, it can tend to be fertile soil for self-righteousness, which there seems to be plenty of, right? So
Oh, yeah.
if good things are happening to you, but bad things are happening to that person, you're like, whatever I'm doing right.
Yeah. God must be. I don't know about that other dude. I mean, he's going through some bad stuff, but man, my life's pretty good. So I guess God's really happy with me. I mean,
Yep.
well, that's a temptation, you know? That's the temptation for those who are at ease. Not even necessarily to have contempt for misfortune, but to have just kind of this naive assumption that just because things are going well in your life, that God must be happy with you. That's not the way that life works. Any more than you can say that when things are going bad in your life, that God is angry with you. The good quality or the bad quality of your life is no gauge upon where you stand with God.
No, and the
You can't.
contempt for misfortune is not just simply a contempt. I don't think Job is saying that. Yeah, oh yeah, you can have contempt for just bad things, but the misfortune happens to people, and so the contempt then is not just for the thing itself, but the contempt moves from misfortune to the object of that misfortune, which is of course a person, and so this can happen. I mean, people do this all the time. So you might, there's a difference, obviously, between if you see some homeless guy in rags on the street, you can wonder I wonder what happened that led to this without despising the person. But you can easily cross into a different thing where you say, I'm so tired of these people. You start to have contempt for the actual individual, not just for the fact that such circumstances exist.
Yeah, exactly. Which is what's happening with Job's friends. He finishes this section, verse 6, with saying, "The tents of robbers are at peace, and those who provoke God are secure, who bring their God in their hand." I think this is Job's way of saying these things are not the way they should be. This seems very unjust because robbers, they're back in their tents, and they're cool. Everything's fine with them. In fact, those who provoke God, they're secure. They're at ease. They're carrying their gods around in their hand, and yet everything's fine with them. But you know, I, a just and blameless man, am a laughing stock to my friends, and I'm held in contempt by them. And I've done everything right as far as I can see. I mean, I've done everything right, and yet everything wrong is befallen me.
But this seems like a theological corrective here, you know. So their whole arguments are like, Job, as you know, good things happen to good people, bad things happen to bad people. That's the way of the world. And Job's like, really? I don't think it is, because it seems to me that there's tents full of robbers, and this isn't happening to them. Like, money is their god. They go and seize that god with their hand, and I don't see them in trash heaps covered in boils. I don't see that happen. Are you sure that God just doles out his justice just completely with complete equity? Are you positive about that? Because I seem to think that there's lots of bad people that aren't having nearly as bad of things happen to them as are happening to me.
Yeah, Job is much more of a realist than his friends. He's also just more observant of human nature.
Yeah.
And he'll later in the book, his friends will kind of go back and forth with him, where they'll talk about how, you know, the wicked perish. You know, you won't see a wicked man living to old age and prospering. And Job will be like, "What world do you live in? That happens all the time. I mean, people get they get rich off of violence and injustice and all this kind of stuff, and they live to a ripe old age. So don't go around telling me that the wicked are always going to suffer in this life. And then Job's friends will say something like, well, you know, sometimes God will delay punishment to a second or third generation. And Job will say, why? What does the guy care what happens to his, you know, his great grandsons? Make sure that he's the one who actually suffers for his wrongdoing. So Job is more of a realist. He actually sees the way the world works, and his friends are kind of living in this this castle of their own creation, very naive about the way this world works. Okay, verse 7. He goes on to say, ask the beast, and they will teach you, the birds of the heavens, and they will tell you, or the bushes of the earth, and they will teach you, and the fish of the sea will declare to you. So go look at creation. You know, go talk to some animals. Go talk to some birds or some bushes or some fish. Who among all these does not know that the hand of the Lord has done this? In his hand is the life of every living thing and the breath of all mankind. Does not the ear test words as the palate tastes food? Wisdom is with the aged and understanding in length of days. So what do you think his point is here?
The point here is that he's saying, like, listen, why don't you go ask that bush if this is something I did or if God is doing this, why don't you go ask that bush? And you know, that bush will tell you that this is something that God is doing. Like, I didn't bring this on myself. I have not participated in this. Like, I am just the recipient of this disaster. And you can go ask the fish or the bush or whatever. This is another way of saying this should be obvious to you, especially if these are people who know him, right? So where he said, you should know me. Like, you should understand the frustration that I'm in and not being able to parse out exactly what's going on here. If you know me, this should be evident to you, like super obvious to you. Like the bird over there can tell you about this. It seems that is what that's what he's getting at. And then of course he goes on to say, I mean, this is saying the same sort of like obvious theological stuff of like God's in charge of everything. I mean, everything that's living is in hand. This is as true as the fact that ears hear words and tongues taste food. Like it's as self-evident as that.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I think. I don't know. Yeah. I might be totally off. That's how I read it.
Yeah, well, it does make sense. I was having trouble kind of fitting it into Job's arguments, you know, especially coming off of those first six verses. But yeah, it does make sense. This should be as obvious as something that any beast of the field or the birds of the heavens or the fish of the sea can explain to you.
Yeah, and even ending with wisdom is in, you know, is with the aged and understanding and the length of the days. Like, you don't need those things to determine this. Like, yeah, that bush knows this. Right? Like, you don't need to be you don't need to so seek out some like wise old sage. That sage bush knows what's going on here.
Patently obvious. Yeah. All right. So he, having said that, verse 13 through 15, he goes on, with God are wisdom and might. He has counsel and understanding. If he tears down, none can rebuild. If he shuts a man in, none can open. If he withholds the waters, they dry up. If he sends them out, they overwhelm the land. With him are strength and sound wisdom. The deceived and the deceiver are his. He leads counselors away stripped and judges he makes fools. He looses the bonds of kings and binds a waistcloth on their hips. He leads priests away stripped and overthrows the mighty. He deprives of speech those who are trusted and takes away the discernment of elders. I guess I'll just read the rest of the season. This is all kind of this one ongoing speech about God doing all these things. He pours contempt on princes, loosens the belt of the strong. He uncovers the deeps out of darkness and brings deep darkness to light. He makes nations great. He destroys them. He enlarges nations and leads them away. He takes away understanding from the chiefs of the people of the earth and makes them wander in a trackless waste. They grope in the dark without light, and he makes them stagger like a drunken man. This whole section from 13 all the way to the end of the chapter it just filled full of example after example of this is the way I'm reading it anyway, is that, listen, God is all wise. God is all powerful. He has all this counsel and understanding. And everything happening in creation is one way or another being done by him, whether it's seemingly good or bad. I mean, he's taking counselors away stripped. He's loosing the bonds of kings. He's depriving some of speech. The deceiver and the deceived are his. So he puts water here. He dries up here. Everything, in other words, is under his control. And the implication of that is including my own life.
Yeah.
So this is not an, everything that's happening to me is not an accident. It's however he did it, God was involved in this. In other words, if he can do all these other things that I've just gone through, if he's all wise and all knowing, all powerful, bringing one nation down, lifting up another nation, if he can, you know, go into the deepest depths of the darkness, then it's not as if I somehow have escaped his attention, have escaped his actions any more than any of these other parts of creation have happened apart from his involvement.
Yeah, and also, and because of all that, if you want to know why this has happened to me, since I don't know, why don't you ask him? Since, you know, he's the one that does everything, you're asking the wrong person, right?
Right.
I don't know.
Yeah, that, I mean, that is... kind of the undercurrent of all this too is this struggle that Job has continued to have because he doesn't know why. God obviously does, but how can he get to God? How can he have a conversation with God? How can he have an umpire between him and God if this is who God is and then this is who Job is? So you definitely are picking up on the fact that he doesn't know where to turn. Because everywhere in which he turns, either finds God attacking him or sending fresh troops against him, or just simply inscrutable in his ways and his dealings with humanity. So he's dealing with a God he can't understand. And then he's also dealing with friends who claim to understand God, but don't truly understand him. So he's got a vertical problem, but he also has a horizontal problem. He can't figure out what God is doing. He doesn't know where he stands with God. And then he has friends who are misdirecting him and accusing him and not being in any way compassionate or helpful as he struggles with the questions that he faces.
Yeah, and these last two verses, he might even be sort of alluding to his friends. I mean, we don't know who these guys are, but Job seems like a guy that was in positions of notability. I mean, like people knew who he was, and he had all. I mean, you can't have what Job had and just be, you know, some anonymous guy. And it does seem as he takes away understanding from the chiefs of the people of the earth, and makes them wander in trackless ways. They grope around in the dark without light, and make them stagger around like drunken men. And it does seem that again, I don't know who these people are that are coming to talk to him, but if they are considered chiefs at all, it seems that this is maybe talking about them. Like, I also think that God has taken away understanding from my friends. They're over here just groping around. They're staggering about. Like they don't understand anything.
Yeah, Job makes eye contact with each of the three friends as he speaks these last couple of verses.
Yeah, well, in verse 20, I think you can kind of see that too. Like he deprives of speech those who are trusted, and takes away the discernment of the elders, right? And so, don't know, but this could also be, he could be also speaking about them. They hear, like, your speech is worthless. Of course, these are his friends. No doubt he trusted them. And takes away the discernment of the elders, right? Like, you have no discernment here. It's coming from you. Your speech, he's deprived any good speech from you.
Yeah, and so all they have to say are platitudes and unhelpful accusations.
Yeah,
but Job isn't done. I mean, that was the end of verse, you know, chapter 12. He's going to continue with chapter 13, but we'll have to get that in our next episode.
Yeah, I mean, he not only he's got two more chapters to go of of continuing.
He's got a lot to say.
He's got a lot to say. So we'll join him for it next time, Chad. I will see you then.
All right, see you then.